The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to Too Jewish with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Joan Nathan, famous Jewish cookbook author and host of a television show on cooking. We'll also visit with our maven on Israel, Danny Bobman, and visit with our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. We'll also get a special visit from Chef Janos Wilder. Please contact us with comments at our email address, TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Southern Arizona's fastest-growing synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in Southern Arizona, and the host of the greatest Hanukkah on Earth at 4:30 this afternoon. We're sponsored as well by Jill Rich of Realty Executives, by Environmental Strategies, by Better Bodies, and by Janos Restaurant and the J-Bar. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Well, the delightful holiday of Hanukkah is almost here, and we have all kinds of ways to prepare for it in store for you this morning. I have always loved Hanukkah, not so much for the American edition that so many kids look forward to, that is, presents, but for the beauty of candles flickering, shimmering, and glowing in menorahs, for the pleasure of a nightly, more than a week-long celebration with family and friends, for the great and completely unhealthy food, and for the wonderful array of marvelous Hanukkah music. We have a show this morning that focuses on great food, never a bad topic for Jews, with our guest Joan Nathan, the outstanding cookbook author, TV show host, and food expert. We also promise a special Hanukkah cooking tip from renowned chef Janos Wilder. And to set the mood for all that food, we have prepared a delectable assortment of splendid Hanukkah melodies. As a vorspeise, an appetizer, here's a little Sephardic song for Hanukkah, Mize Yimalel, who is like you, God, who saved our ancestors and brings us to celebration.
Mize Yimalel, Yisrael Yitvonan, Mime Batit Yahu Ben Yohanan, Anlofi Esmach, Hasis Balonai, Mikira Asot, Mne Hashmonai, Rambu Aramim, Nigla Vesinai, Mifori Botai, Tahula, Gasro, Ashabat, Rosh, Kodesh, Umila, Yachat, Shashtan, Yavro, Umila.
That was Mize Yimalel, a Sephardic Hanukkah song to start our pre-Hanukkah show. That word Hanukkah means dedication, and it comes from the rededication of the temple in Jerusalem in the year 165 BCE, slightly less than 2,200 years ago. You may know the story, but a little refresher never hurts. In the first purely religious persecution in human history, but of course certainly not the last, the Syrian Greek Empire of the Seleucids tried to compel our people not to worship God. Led by the tyrant emperor Antiochus IV Epiphanes, known to Jews as Antiochus, decrees went out requiring that his statues were to be erected in every town in Israel, and particularly that a great statue of the evil King Antiochus was to be placed in the Holy Temple in Jerusalem. To suppress the outlawed religion of Judaism, the teaching of Torah was banned on punishment of death, and both circumcision and keeping kosher were made capital crimes. In particular, any instruction of children in the ways of our ancestors was absolutely forbidden, and the laws were enforced by squads of soldiers armed with spears, swords, and bows and arrows. To emphasize the religious subjugation of the Jews, distinctly unkosher pigs were sacrificed on the altar of the temple itself, and the lights of the sacred menorah were extinguished. Judaism looked like it, too, was about to be extinguished. It was at this time of greatest darkness that one family rose up and refused to bow to the idol of Antiochus, that first real evil emperor. Led by Matityahu Mattathias, in Greek pronunciation, a family known as the Hasmoneans struck back. At first, many Jews simply complied with Antiochus' demands. His army was the greatest in the world at that time, and there seemed to be no alternative. But finally, the oppressed people of Israel could stand it no more. It began in an obscure town in the Judean hills called Modin, with the overthrow of a tax collector and a refusal to bow down to that awful statue. The Hasmonean family, soon led by the most dynamic of Mattathias' sons, Judah, began a guerrilla war, hiding out in caves and in the forests, striking at the better-armed and more numerous Seleucid armies. It was a careful campaign that gathered strength over time. In spite of the use of battle elephants brought from the Seleucid Empire's Indian possessions, they were the Abrams M1 tank of that era, in spite of all the military advantages that seemed to lie with the occupying power, the Jews, led by Judah the Hammer, which is Maccabean Hebrew more or less, gained the upper hand. The Syrian Greeks were driven from the main part of Israel, and finally from the temple in Jerusalem itself, which was cleansed and prepared and turned again into proper condition for sanctification. The rededication that took place happened at a great festival of Thanksgiving, what we call Chanukah. The lights of the Hanukkah menorah remind us of that great miracle of our salvation from religious persecution, and of the great triumph of the few over the many, the weak over the strong, the believers over those who would destroy us. Here's a musical celebration of that triumph from the great cantor Jan Peirce, Haneros Halalu and Al Hanisim, two pivotal prayers for Hanukkah.
Yalla purkum yalla gevoros Alla nisim yalla purkum yalla gevoros Yalla chuvos yalla chuvos Yalla milchomos yalla milchomos Kies is a lavosena Bayomi bayomi mohen
yes, in Beal, a poor come Beal, a Geboros. Alla, yes, in Beal, a poor come Beal, a Geboros. Beal, a chuvos, Beal, a chuvos, Beal, a milfamos, Beal, a milfamos, yes, yes, a la voceta. Bayomim, bayomim, bohem, bayomim, bohem,
Cantor Jan Pierce's classic Hanukkah songs on Nerot Halalu and Al Hanisim. When we come back, we'll meet our guest, cookbook author and TV show host, Joan Nathan.
The greatest Hanukkah on earth is coming to Temple Emmanuel Sunday, December 14th at 4:30 p.m. Join Temple Emmanuel for the largest, most spectacular, and most enjoyable Hanukkah celebration of all, featuring a wonderful array of music, theater, dance, stories, and magic. Hanukkah comes to life at the Temple's 5th Annual Festival of Lights. Sing and celebrate Hanukkah with us. Begin by helping light the giant outdoor menorah on Country Club Road at 4:30 p.m. and then rejoice with the Avanim Rock Band, Temple Emmanuel Youth and Teen Choir, our string quartet, Rabbi Sam Cohen and David Freeland, and an array of great performers. Bring a menorah and two candles as we light up the night in a gorgeous finale that will make this your most memorable Hanukkah ever. This Hanukkah event is open to all, and there's no charge for the show. Come join the fun at the temple. If you want to join us for a great traditional brisket and latke dinner afterwards, call the temple at 327-4501 and make a reservation with your credit card. Sunday, December 14th, beginning at 4:30 p.m., it's the great greatest Hanukkah on earth at Temple Emmanuel.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish the outstanding author, chef, and food expert Joan Nathan. For Joan Nathan, food is more than an occupation. It is history, heritage, and culture, and it's Jewish identity. She's the author of award-winning cookbooks, the host of the acclaimed PBS series Jewish Cooking in America with Joan Nathan. Joan is an internationally recognized expert on food culture and is a recent inductee into Who's Who in Wine and Food by the James Beard Foundation. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish, Joan Nathan. Good morning, Joan.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Joan, how did you become a Jewish food expert?
Well, I was living in Jerusalem, and actually, the answer should be gradually, but I was living in Jerusalem working for Teddy Kollek. And he, the mayor of Jerusalem,
of course.
He loved to eat.
The longtime mayor of Jerusalem had a huge impact on the creation of the modern city of Jerusalem.
And I would go to different people's homes. And, you know, I, like everybody else, grew up on my mother's chicken soup and challah. And, you know, for me, food was Ashkenazi. And I went to Israel, and there it was. It was Sephardic. And I just became hooked on Israel and on Jerusalem food. So I wrote my first cookbook called The Flavor of Jerusalem as a lark. I never, ever thought that I would go into writing about Jewish food as a career.
When your book on Jerusalem cooking came out, you thought, you know, several hundred people would buy it, but it didn't turn out that way.
No, the first book sold about 25,000, which is very good for a first cookbook. And, of course, in those days, many, many books were sold in Israel. The publishers had just started sending their cookbook writers around the country, and I went on book tours. I don't know how many book tours I've gone on since then, because they usually have me go twice, once in the spring and once in the fall when my book comes out.
The Flavor of Jerusalem was just the beginning. When we come back, we'll talk with Joan Nathan about her classic Jewish Cooking in America and her PBS series and all about Jewish food.
Environmental Strategies Incorporated was established in Arizona almost 15 years ago. They're a corporation that's very unique and has distinguished itself as one of the foremost environmental remediation companies in Arizona. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is also a full-service general contractor. The fact that they have two divisions affords their clients the opportunity to work with one contractor to deal with environmental problems as well as their building and remodeling needs. Environmental Strategies clientele range from single-family homeowners to multi-million-dollar Fortune 500 companies. So, if you're in need of asbestos abatement, mold remediation, or general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies at 884-1114. And if you wish, ask for Ken Goodman, the president. He'd be more than happy to talk with you about your project. That's Environmental Strategies, 884-1114.
When I started working out with Jeremy, I weighed 137 pounds and I had 29% body fat.
Barb talks about her experience with personal trainer Jeremy Price of Better Bodies.
After 12 weeks, I weighed 117 pounds and had 14% body fat. My energy level skyrocketed.
In their new private facility, Better Bodies makes it easy to lose your body fat fast.
Physically, I feel better than I have in my whole life, and my family and friends and everyone around me sees a big difference.
After just 6 weeks, Better Bodies promises you a better body, and individual programs start at only $39.99 a month.
At Better Bodies, it's a great atmosphere and positive and energetic and encouraging.
For a free personal evaluation, call Better Bodies at 975-7074.
You will definitely see results.
That's 975-7074 or on the web at betterbodiestucson.com.
As part of our pre-Hanukkah fest today, I should note that Hanukkah is certainly not just about serious themes. For example, for younger generations, the classic Hanukkah song is not Moaz Tzur or I Have a Little Dreidel, but Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song, which comes in three versions, 1, 2, and 3. Eventually, one supposes he'll make it up to 8 versions for all 8 crazy nights. Our teen choir will sing a version of it at the greatest Hanukkah on earth this afternoon at Temple Emmanuel, and here's a slightly expurgated version of this contemporary classic.
This is a song that... There's a lot of Christmas songs out there, and not too many Hanukkah songs. So wrote a song for all those nice little Jewish kids who don't get to hear any Hanukkah songs. Here we go. Put on your yarmulke, here comes Hanukkah. So much Hanukkah to celebrate Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the festival of lights. Instead of one day of presents, we have 8 crazy nights. When you feel like the only kid in town without a Christmas tree, here's a list of people who are Jewish. Just like you and me. David Lee Roth lights the menorah. So do James Conkirk Douglas and the late Dinah Shore. Guess who eats together at the Carnegie Deli? Bowser from Shanana and Arthur Fonzarelli. Paul Newman's half Jewish, Goldie Hawn's half too. Put them together, what a fine looking Jew. You don't need Deck the Halls or Jingle Bell Rock, cause you can spin a dreidel with Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock. Both Jewish. Put on your yarmulke, it's time for Hanukkah. The owner of the Seattle Supersonicas celebrates Hanukkah. O.J. Simpson, not a Jew. But guess who is? Hall of Famer Rod Carew. He converted. We got Ann Landers and her sister, dear Abby. Harrison Ford's a quarter Jewish, not too shabby. Some people think that Ebenezer Scrooge is. Well, he's not, but guess who is? All Three Stooges. So many Jews are in showbiz. Tom Cruise isn't, but I heard his agent is. Tell your friend Veronica, it's time to celebrate Hanukkah. Oh, boy, get a harmonica on this lovely, lovely Hanukkah. If you really, really want a car, have a happy, 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 happy Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah.
Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song 1. Next week, we get version 2. It's always around Hanukkah that we read the great story of Joseph in the Torah. Joseph's the principal character of the last four weekly portions of Genesis, and the story itself has been called the first truly modern piece of literature, which is particularly impressive since it was written at least 2,500 years ago, and most of us would add a millennium or so to that number. The Joseph story stretches through a month of readings, but it begins with a bang in this week's portion of Vayeshev. Our great ancestor Jacob's beloved wife Rachel has died in childbirth, and in a pained overcompensation, Jacob spoils Rachel's oldest son Joseph, giving him a famous coat of many colors and using him as a tattletale spy on his older, tougher brothers. The brothers' revenge is swift. They capture him and sell him into slavery in Egypt, and tell their father Jacob that a wild animal has killed him. After adventures that demonstrate Joseph's virtue and his spectacularly bad luck, at least at this stage of the story, this week's portion ends with Joseph stuck in an Egyptian prison, Jacob in mourning, and all hope seemingly lost. The abiding message of the Joseph story is that God's plan will work, but we aren't always party to why. But a second message is even more important, perhaps. Our children are all precious. Favoring the good one doesn't do anyone any good. In keeping with our cooking theme today, we're delighted to have our good friend Janos Wilder here to share some Hanukkah tips on everybody's favorite food, latkes. Janos, you like latkes?
I love latkes. Who doesn't like latkes?
How can you not like latkes? What's the best way to prepare to make latkes, in your opinion?
Well, I think the biggest key is rinsing the potatoes. So after you grate the potatoes, and you know, like an Idaho potato is really about the best one to use, peel it and then grate it, but then rinse the potato. This is Nock Waxman's secret about latkes, is you rinse the potatoes and get all the starch and the extra excess liquid out of them. But then what's happened is you remove the starch. So you've got to put a binder back in, and so you'll put flour in, or you can put matzo meal in, although that doesn't absorb nearly as well. But then flour, then you can add the other flavorings that you like.
So you actually need the flour because you wash away the starch, which otherwise makes them too sticky or not cooked properly?
Well, no, it's too much liquid. The potato is full of water, and it's too much liquid, and it makes them runny, and the drier potato will fry up crisper.
And, of course, a crisp latke is the only way to have latkes on Hanukkah.
That's the key.
What's the best thing to eat with latkes?
You know, some people like sour cream. I'm not a big sour cream fan, but applesauce. That's what we have, applesauce. And sour cream, too, because some of us like sour cream.
Any special ways of making applesauce to go with the latkes?
I think I put the jar in my left hand, and with my right hand, I twist off the top.
Thanks, Janos, for that critical tip on making Hanukkah perfect this year in the kitchen.
I think the easiest way is the best way sometimes. You know what I mean?
All right, so don't forget to wash your latkes before you fry them, and don't wash them after you fry them, whatever you do.
There you go.
Thanks, Janos.
You're welcome.
When we return, we'll have the old Jewish joke of the week and hear from our mavens, Danny Bobman and Tom Price.
Every once in a while, you want a different sort of day. A day you can be transported in a comfortable coach bus, partake in a wonderful luncheon, and see a show you'll truly enjoy, like Showboat. Min will take you on a journey of pure delight. For entertainment trips to Mesa, Globe, and elsewhere, call Min at 296-1190. The delightful musical Showboat will be performed on the 25th of February in Mesa, Arizona. It's $60 for the whole experience, including the bus, the meal, and the show. Call Min at 296-1190. Ask about their Apache Gold overnight trip, too. It's to enjoy. Call Min at 296-1190.
Time now for an increasingly popular feature of Too Jewish, our old joke of the week, humor your Bubby and Zadie knew. One day, a little girl is sitting and watching her mother do the dishes at the kitchen sink. She notices that her mother has several strands of white hair sticking out, the contrast with her brown hair. Little girl looks at her mom and says, "Why are some of your hairs white, Mama?" And her mother answers, "Well, every time you do something wrong that makes me unhappy or cry, one of my hairs turns white." Little girl thinks about this revelation for a while and then says, "So, Mama, how come all of Bubby's hairs are white?" That's the old joke of the week. Humor Your Bubby and Zadie Knew, a special feature of Too Jewish, brought to you as a public service. If you have questions, comments, or criticism, send it all to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com. You can now get CDs of past Too Jewish shows for a nominal cost by calling Temple Emmanuel at 327-4501 or on the web at TempleEmmanuelTucson.org. When we come back, we'll talk with Danny Bobman and Tom Price, our mavens on Israel and the international Jewish scene, and get the news of Jews around the world.
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool, they really have fun.
Aleph, Bet, Vet.
Aleph, Bet, Vet.
Gimel, Dalet, Hey.
Gimel, Dalet, Hey.
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool.
Temple Emmanuel Preschool.
We learn and play all day.
We learn and play all day. Yay!
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool, children are welcome from 6 weeks to pre-kindergarten. We've got small class sizes with a low student-to-teacher ratio. Our professional staff is highly trained and nurturing, and the school offers an all-day extended program with a rich learning curriculum including science, art, music, and dance. Of course, Temple Emmanuel Preschool is open to community members of all faiths. We invite you to come for a visit anytime. Just call Lynn or Melissa at 325-0390. Remember, at Temple Emmanuel Preschool,
we learn and play all day.
Temple Emmanuel Preschool on Country Club just north of Broadway. Call 325-0390 or go to TempleEmmanuelTucson.org. So, here you are, enjoying your Sunday morning with Rabbi Sam Kohan, his mavens, and his friends. Isn't it great hearing the variety of in-depth interviews, the traditional and not-so-traditional Jewish music, the news of Jews around the world, and of course the wit and humor that you've come to expect? You know, producing Too Jewish is a labor of love, but we do need your help. We'd like to ask your business to consider advertising right here within our show. By advertising here, you'll reach an educated, affluent audience, an audience that's loyal. It's easy and inexpensive to advertise on Too Jewish. Just call 327-4501. Your call will help guarantee that Too Jewish remains a source for the best of Jewish culture. Please call today, 327-4501. 327-4501. And thanks from your friends right here at Too Jewish.
Our maven on Israel, Danny Bobman, is here to talk about Hanukkah on his kibbutz in Israel and all of the wonderful parts of this great holiday. Happy Hanukkah, Danny. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Rabbi. Hanukkah is only 6 days away, and I got to tell you, Hanukkah brings back very strong memories. As a kid in Degania, my kibbutz, we used to start preparing our lampions for the light march, creating colorful candle houses on top of broomsticks to carry proudly at the parade. There was a best lampion contest, and the incentives were high. It seems everyone on the kibbutz were busy making sufganiyot, donuts, and latkes. The smells were incredible. You could see trails of sugar powder all around the kibbutz. We were indoctrinated. Hanukkah was the holiday of the brave, those that took their destiny in their own hands and overcame the forces of darkness. The Maccabees were the IDF soldiers, the Halutzim, the new Jewish people who emerged from the ashes of the diaspora better than they were before. Better, stronger, faster. We sang the famous Israeli song, Anu Nosim Lapidim. We are carrying the torches. And the lyrics go on and saying, we had no miracle. We did not find the oil can. It was we in our own hands that brought back the lights to the Jewish people. We built huge fire signs and we lighted them up with fire buckets. We glided down on cables from the high silo. Hanukkah was majestic. Between the lights and the songs and the nightly ceremonies, it was easy to forget that the most of the Maccabees' battles were between themselves and their fellow Jews. The cultural war that was waged in Israel 2,300 years ago ended with the triumph of the ultra-Orthodox. They got the temple up and running, and the Hellenistic culture waited 200 years just to make a huge comeback, which keeps us busy preserving our Jewish identity today as well. The early Israelis locked on to the message of heroism, self-sacrificing, and no compromising. Today, Israelis could benefit from a broader perspective of Hanukkah. The price we would pay for division, the consequences from imposing convictions on one another, the danger of patronizing our diaspora brothers and sisters, and finally, remembering the original reason for all these Hanukkah lights. Hanukkah is merely a late Sukkot celebration. Since the temple was closed down to business because of the battles, the first time Sukkot could be re-celebrated was 3 months later when the order was restored. Sukkot was the biggest Jewish holiday. It had both the celebration of fire, lights, and water. It had 8 days of sacrifices, one for the first day, two for the second day, and so on. If we can celebrate today restoring order and worshiping peacefully, I think we got the true message of Hanukkah. So, watch out for the calories, Rabbi, and happy Hanukkah to you all.
Thanks, Danny. We'll watch the calories and pray for peace both. When we return, we'll talk to Tom Price about the international Jewish scene and get the news of Jews around the world.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
We're here with renowned Southwestern chef Janos Wilder, who is the proprietor of Janos and the J-Bar. Tell us about some special holiday opportunities coming up.
Well, the holidays are always an exciting time at both restaurants. And one of the things people are looking for this time of year are gifts. And of course, gift certificates are a great thing. So we have gift certificates available for dinner at Janos or J-Bar or for my cooking classes. You can buy the cookbooks. So we have all sorts of opportunities for people for gift giving over the holidays.
And at a bunch of different levels. So
any level you want, really. We don't have them filled out in advance. You tell us what you want to do, and we make it out. It's all customized and personalized for whoever you want to give it to.
Is that a good gift for not only a spouse, but for parents, kids?
Parents, kids, and business associates. A lot of people like to use gift certificates to restaurants for business associates.
And if it's a cooking class, it might be considered a helpful suggestion to someone who's not as renowned a chef as you?
We'll teach them how to cook. We're doing that once a month. Cooking classes once a month at the restaurant on a Saturday. We have a whole schedule. This week we're doing a New Year's Day brunch. Next month we're going to do something for Valentine's Day. After that we're going to be working on things for the spring.
What's the best phone number to call?
615-6100.
Thanks, Janos.
Thank you.
We welcome Tom Price, our expert on the international Jewish scene, here this morning. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi. Pleasure to be here.
Tom, Hanukkah is coming up soon. I think of Hanukkah as the great cultural contrast between Hellenism and Judaism, although most people think about latkes and menorahs. Can you tell us a little bit about the historical contrast between the two cultures?
Yes. Like you, I think that history is very important. And it's important to know that for several hundred years, Jews in Israel and in the Mediterranean world in general, lived under either Greek political rule or Greek cultural influence. First, let's consider the Jews in Israel, who from 332 to 200 BCE lived under a Greek dynasty known as the Ptolemies, and from 200 BCE until the Roman conquest, lived under another Greek dynasty known as the Seleucids.
Now, that whole episode with the Greeks began because Alexander the Great conquered the Middle East.
Well, Alexander the Great conquered more than the Middle East. He went all the way to India.
Of course.
And there are interesting remnants of Greek influence even in eastern Afghanistan and northern Pakistan today, which we can talk about on
another
some other occasion because
sure.
It's not really related to Jews. But the later books of the Old Testament, which were written at or around this time, like Ecclesiastes and Daniel, show a lot of the pervasive cultural influence of the Greeks on Jews living in or near the land of Israel. The reaction of Jews to this cultural invasion, if you will, or dominance, was quite diverse. Some saw Greek influence as a menace. Some saw it really as a mortal threat to Jewish survival. Some saw it as a sort of moral temptation to stray, and others saw it as an opportunity in one of several senses. The earliest texts from Qumran, which date from the period of the Ptolemies, reflect a certain perception of the Greek threat and advocate, in the words of one historian, quote, a retreat into the wilderness to recapture the pristine Mosaic enthusiasm and then launch back into the cities. Some Jewish groups, like the Essenes, thought this could be done peacefully by the word, and they preached in villages on the edge of the desert. Others, like the Qumran community, put their trust in the sword and were planning a Joshua-like invasion of urban areas, rather like a guerrilla movement today. On the other hand, there were highly urbanized and wealthy Jews living both in Israel and in the Greek-speaking diaspora, places like Antioch or Alexandria, right? Who tended to see Greek dominance as an opportunity. They Hellenized their names. They changed their names to Greek names. They sent their sons to Greek schools. And they eagerly adopted large components of the Greek value system.
And it's that contrast in the value systems that ultimately leads to the Maccabean Revolt and so to Hanukkah. Tom, thanks very much. We'll continue this next week. Chag Hanukkah Sameach.
Same to you. Thank you.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Rebuffing appeals from Israel, Secretary of State Colin Powell met with two self-appointed peace negotiators promoting a shadow agreement on a Palestinian state. Meeting at the State Department was between Powell and Yossi Beilin of Israel and Yasser Abed Rabo, who led the Palestinian delegation at Geneva last week. Thought it was a very good meeting, Powell said in front of the State Department after a separate session he had with King Abdullah of Jordan. Elliot Abrams, Director of Middle East Affairs at the White House, attended the meeting. Abrams was an outspoken critic of the Clinton administration's approach to the Middle East, from which the Beilin-Rabo plan borrows heavily. We continue to talk to both sides, including at very high levels, says an administration official. We're encouraging each to do the things that each side can do. So far, we're hearing lots of talk. Frankly, that's all that's likely to come out of all this Geneva Accord nonsense. It's not that the idea of a real peace accord is either wrong or silly. It's just that this isn't it. And all the overheated rhetoric on both sides is completely unwarranted. In fact, the whole thing is a tempest in a teapot, or perhaps a Swiss fondue pot in this case. A bunch of has-beens in Israel and for the Palestinians, highlighted by Jimmy Carter, probably the world's greatest has-been, have gotten together and agreed that President Clinton's old Middle East plan is the right one to solve one of the world's most intractable political problems. It's sort of an international fantasy camp. Kind of a kumbaya approach to diplomacy. It's like that old Yardbirds song. Come on, people now, smile on your brother. Everybody get together. Try to love one another right now. You know, a really good idea, but unlikely to have a lot of practical political impact. I mean, if a real agreement giving the Palestinian Authority an actual country couldn't be accepted by Arafat and the Palestinians 3 years ago, where could this imaginary agreement possibly go? The fascinating part is how focused world attention is on the whole Geneva Accord silliness. I mean, tell me, who would be paying attention if Gerald Ford and Mikhail Gorbachev signed a symbolic agreement today eliminating nuclear weapons, and then Shimon Peres spoke at the signing ceremony? Nobody much, not even if they were later received at the State Department by Colin Powell and got to talk to some people at the United Nations. What government is going to change policy on account of a shadow agreement signed by a group who, between them, represent fewer people than will vote for Al Sharpton for president? The more heated the response to this feel-good group is by Israel and its supporters in the U.S., the more credibility it gains. Let it die quietly, as so many other well-meaning and soft-headed plans for peace do. It's not that peace isn't desirable, it's critical. But it isn't going to happen as long as Yasser Arafat leads the Palestinians. And when the first Palestinian response to virtually anything is to send out suicide bombers to murder Israeli civilians. In other news, Israel is not on a U.S. list of 63 countries eligible to compete for $18.6 billion in Iraqi reconstruction. Most of the snub nations on the Defense Department list, including Russia, France, China, and Germany, were firm opponents of the war. That cannot be said of Israel, of course, which has been a principal supporter of the Iraqi war and the occupation. The approved countries list, reportedly finalized last week by Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz, includes Jordan, Egypt, Kazakhstan, and Turkey. The U.S. explained its decision to bar certain countries as a matter of national security, but a firestorm of complaints have argued that its motives are political, or perhaps personal and economic. Companies from Israel and the other banned nations may contend for small U.S. finance contracts in Iraq, but not for the reconstruction projects such as rebuilding the electric grid or oil infrastructure. Perhaps the Bush administration is simply worried that Israeli companies will outcompete its own pets, like Halliburton, for contracts. In somewhat startling news this week, former Vice President Al Gore endorsed presidential candidate Howard Dean. This had to be a disappointment to Gore's loyal running mate in 2000, Senator Joe Lieberman, who had waited to declare his candidacy for the presidency until after Gore himself declined to run. So much for loyalty in politics. A screening of Mel Gibson's controversial film, The Passion of Christ, for a trio of highly influential Vatican congregations resulted in a strong endorsement from an American official speaking for one of the three. The endorsement prompted calls from the Anti-Defamation League for Gibson to make screenings available to those concerned about the film's anti-Semitic content. The Passion was screened last weekend for members of the Vatican Secretariat of State, the Pontifical Council for Social Communications, and the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Those present expressed unanimous appreciation and approval of the film, as might be expected in a hierarchical organization. ADL National Director Abraham Foxman expressed suspicion over the quick turnaround. It's a little strange that it's ready, but be that as it may, I hope their judgment on this film is good, Foxman said. I hope it's free of what we are all concerned about, and that is blaming the Jews. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We are thrilled to welcome back Joan Nathan, who is probably the most prominent Jewish cook in America today and maybe in the world, author of award-winning cookbooks, in particular, Jewish Cooking in America, which is a classic that's in, I expect, almost every good Jewish kitchen in America. She has received awards from the James Beard Foundation, Julia Child. And her newest book, The Foods of Israel Today, contains recipes from Jewish, Christian, and Muslim traditions. Joan Nathan is a founder of New York's 9th Avenue Food Festival and has appeared on TV programs ranging from Today to Martha Stewart. 1995, she received the Golda Award from the American Jewish Congress for her creative contributions to the quality of life around our nation's capital. Joan Nathan is host and executive producer of Jewish Cooking in America with Joan Nathan, her second national television project. She has also done a program, Passover Traditions of Freedom, which is kind of a classic, too. Delighted to welcome back Joan Nathan. Joan, what do you think the most important thing is in Jewish cooking?
The first thing that comes to mind is love. What makes Jewish cooking Jewish is the following of dietary laws. That said, you know, what is Jewish cooking? Jewish cooking is adapting the dietary laws to French cooking, American cooking, English cooking, Eastern European cooking, and just adjusting it. I think there are very, very few Jewish recipes.
Holidays are always a basis for Jewish food traditions. Hanukkah's coming up. Do you have any particular recipes you love for Hanukkah?
Well, yeah, I mean, I love potato pancakes, but not frozen. I like fresh.
I think they're God's perfect food.
Right. I mean, I love potatoes, but I like them when they're very crispy, thin, and, you know, delicious. But they're, you know, today we have every kind of potato pancake. I'm sure in the Southwest they have them topped with goat cheese and
little ancho chili and
right puree. Well, you know, gefilte fish, they have, I was told, and maybe you can attest to this, that that there's tilapia gefilte fish in the Southwest.
Oh, yeah, there is. Sure. You know, gefilte fish was always made with the least expensive local fish. So when tilapia is inexpensive, that's what you make gefilte fish out of. Do you trade off making holidays with your friends?
Oh, absolutely. Well, actually, I do a lot of the cooking for holidays at my house, but I also give people recipes from my books so they can make things and, you know, make my life a little bit easier.
The status of women in the cooking field, it seems to me, has risen considerably, the professional cooking field. Julia Child was, of course, a great pioneer, but I do remember that there was a time when the Culinary Institute of America only took men because my mother-in-law said she applied and they told her until you could pick up a side of beef, you couldn't get in.
Right.
Has that been your experience? Has it changed over the course of the time you've been working?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at the number of women chefs all over the country. I mean, cookbook writers have, for the most part, been women, but the number of cookbooks is, you know, it's
skyrocketing.
Hugely more.
Is that because food is more interesting and there's more choice?
Well, yeah, I think that there's more choice. I think that the baby boomers have grown up. I think that, you know, there are people that broke ground in cookbooks, and then there became more of a market. I mean, there might have been 20 cookbooks that were printed 20 years ago. There may be 800 a year now.
I saw an interesting article that said that there are now some remarkably fine kosher restaurants that really do outstanding cuisine in places you wouldn't expect. Is that part of it, that so many people are eating out?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are a lot of kosher restaurants in New York. There are a few in San Francisco. In Chicago, there are some, but I don't know. I Cleveland, I know there are some.
Los Angeles has a few.
Oh, and Los Angeles, of course, has a lot.
Do you eat out much?
Oh, yeah. This week, I've eaten out almost every night. I'm exhausted from doing it, but usually I don't because I'm writing a book right now and I test a lot of recipes.
So it's a way to try things out at home.
Right.
Who were your mentors in becoming a Jewish chef?
Well, I'm not really a Jewish chef. I'm a Jewish cookbook writer.
Sorry, I take that back.
A TV personality, but I'm not a chef. Well, my mentor, I think, as far as writing and finding your own voice, is definitely Jewish. Julia Child. She's amazing that way. If you look at the way that she writes recipes, the way she talks in her books, I like Marcella Hazan a lot with her Italian cookbooks. But my real mentor is David McCulloch because he doesn't have a PhD and he writes historical works that you want to read. And I kind of like to do that with my cookbooks.
It's very interesting. So it's not Julia Child, but David McCulloch that influences you the most. Are we going to see a TV program in which you do a documentary on Civil War cuisine that you narrate now?
No, but I think you might. I hope that you'll be seeing one on American food. I'm doing one on American food in the last 30 years.
My friend Janos Wilder, who's a...
Oh, yeah, he's in my cookbook.
Yeah, he's a wonderful Southwestern chef, a Jewish kid from the Bay Area, has been heavily influenced, of course, by living in this area. Is it your Jerusalem influence that's been the greatest influence in the way that you write about Jewish food?
Well, I think that probably yes, because it really woke me up to the other, different cuisines, different kinds of people. And that and growing up in Providence, Rhode Island, where there was a big Italian and other ethnic communities. And my father loved going to them and speaking to all these people.
Who do you think are the new influences in Jewish cooking now? Are there individual authors or chefs?
The new influences?
You've had a tremendous influence yourself.
Well, let me think. I don't know. I think that, you know, Faye Levy has good books. Joyce Goldstein. Marcy Goldman is very good in baking.
Let me ask a different question. What makes for a good cookbook?
A good cookbook has to be more than recipes. There has to be, you know, you can just go to a food magazine, get your recipes. I like to put food into I mean, this is what I think, not everybody else thinks. I like a book that you can cook by and you can read by, that you can go to sleep at night reading what somebody says about people, about a country. It has to be a narrative, and the recipes have to sing to me. Like Paula Wolfert just wrote it's not a Jewish cookbook at all, but she's got some fabulous Jewish recipes, old Jewish recipes. And you have a sense that she really met these people, stayed with these people, got the recipes from these people. That's what I really like. You know, where I'm going to really learn something other than just a recipe.
So it's food as an expression of life.
Right, exactly.
And in Jewish books, that would be why in your cookbooks you seem to have sometimes photos of you and your kids or your family, that it's a way of expressing the whole experience.
Right, exactly.
What's your favorite Jewish food besides latkes?
Oh, boy. I mean,
if you had to make a choice, would it be latkes or falafel?
There's so many things I like. I love falafel. I love a Moroccan, it's called matbusha, and it's a tomato salad that's cooked down forever, and it's just, you have the essence of tomatoes in it. It's actually North African. There's a Tunisian variation. My guess is every single village might have a variation. There's a Tunisian artichoke and orange salad that is one of the best things I've ever had in my life. I love brisket. I like my brisket a lot.
Of course.
It's the ultimate comfort food. I like good chicken soup and good matzo balls that are not too light. I like Alsatian Jewish plum kuchen for Rosh Hashanah. I like sufganiyot at Hanukkah.
Those are the fried jelly donuts, which are so you can't find them outside of Israel, I don't think.
Oh, yes, you can, all over.
Well, I mean, you can't find them quite the same way.
Right, that's true, that's true. So, you know, there's a lot of food I like.
Where do
bread, great breads, babka, a good homemade challah. You know, look at my cookbooks, there are a lot of great And I feel very proud of my books in the sense that, especially my Jewish Holiday Kitchen, it's been in print. I have four books that are still in print, or five books, actually. My Jewish Holiday Kitchen is very much in print, and it's actually going to be reissued next year in a 25th anniversary edition. But what I like about it is that the recipes, and there are a lot of Sephardic recipes, which, of course, everybody likes right now, is Sephardic food, that these recipes are very modern, and yet I got them from the best of cooks that are no longer around. So I got the traditions and the food from people in 1979 that we can use today.
And using it today and helping us make Jewish food the best it can be, I want to thank Joan Nathan for a delightful visit this morning on Too Jewish. Thank you, Joan.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll get a final musical play out and hear about next week's guest.
The greatest Hanukkah on earth is coming to Temple Emmanuel Sunday, December 14th at 4:30 p.m. Join Temple Emmanuel for the largest, most spectacular, and most enjoyable Hanukkah celebration of all. Featuring a wonderful array of music, theater, dance, stories, and magic. Hanukkah comes to life at the Temple's 5th annual Festival of Lights. Sing and celebrate Hanukkah with us. Begin by helping light the giant outdoor menorah on Country Club Road at 4:30 p.m. And then rejoice with the Avanim Rock Band, Temple Emmanuel Youth and Teen Choir, our string quartet, Rabbi Sam Cohen and David Freeland, and an array of great performers. Bring a menorah and two candles as we light up the night in a gorgeous finale that'll make this your most memorable Hanukkah ever. This Hanukkah event is open to all, and there's no charge for the show. Come join the fun at the temple. If you want to join us for a great traditional brisket and latke dinner afterwards, call the temple at 327-4501 and make a reservation with your credit card. Sunday, December 14th, beginning at 4:30 p.m., it's the greatest Hanukkah on earth at Temple Emmanuel. Thank you for joining us this morning on Too Jewish with Rabbi Sam Cohen and friends. You can contact us at 327-4501 or at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com. Come back next Sunday at 10 right here on 990 AM KTKT.
Thanks for being here. Join us next week when our guest will be Rabbi Kinneret Shiryon, Rabbi of Kehilat Yozma in Modin, Israel, a dynamic part of the progressive movement in Israel. Our playout this morning is another Hanukkah piece from Peter Yarrow, the American Hanukkah song, Light One Candle. You can hear that tonight at the greatest Hanukkah on Earth at Temple Emmanuel. The fun starts at 4:30 this afternoon, 225 North Country Club Road. It'll be spectacular. And this Friday at Temple, we have our Kabbalistic Hanukkah service at 7:30. Don't miss it. Call 327-4501. My friends, have a good morning, a Chag Chanukah Sameach, a happy and delightful Chanukah, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Light one candle for the Maccabee children, give thanks that their life didn't die. Light one candle for the pain they endured, when their right to exist was denied. Light one candle for the terrible sacrifice justice and freedom demand. And light one candle for the wisdom to know when the peacemaker's time is at hand. Don't let the light go out. It's lasted for so many years. Don't let the light go out. Let it shine through our love and our tears. Don't let go out, it's lasted for so many years. Don't let the light go out.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.